We welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Hey everybody, welcome to Cage My IQ. This is the interview with one championship contender, John Wayne Parr. I am your host, D-Bake, and this is my co-host, Jim DeLulo. And just like I said before, we would like to welcome John Wayne Parr to the show. How's it going, John?
I'm very well, thank you. Good over the fight, back to Australia, in quarantine, so life is good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And as everybody can see in there, he has a Ferris wheel in the background. You can't beat that. Look at that.
It's so crazy. It's so cool. It's so cool. I want to go out there and get on it, but I'm stuck here. I can't get in there. But it looks so enticing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we get started, I just wanted to see, how has quarantine been? And as everybody knows, you just fought this Wednesday and didn't go your way, but we know that you're going to bounce back better than ever next time.
Yes.
But how has quarantine been?
So that was my first fight in 20 months. My last fight was August 2019 in Japan on Rising. And then in that time we had COVID. I had a hip surgery. I was retired. I was done. And then I was lucky to take one of my fighters to Singapore in November 2019. And I met Mr. Chatry for the first time. And then we had a chat in the back room, and he enticed me to come back. He said, "What are we going to do to get you to come and fight for one championship, to have one more run for the title?" And it's like, oh, I don't know. And then I got a phone call a few days later with a prize money that would double my prize money that I was making for Bellator. And it's like, holy crap, that's amazing. So I got my hip fixed. I'm done. And then I finally had my debut. I didn't get the decision that I wanted, but I'm just absolutely humbled by the amount of by the social media and all the fans and everyone. Even though I lost, everyone's is just being so understanding and so positive. And not a single person has told me to retire or told me that I'm a bum. Everyone's said I was full of courage, and it's just been. Words can't describe how happy I feel that this is the part that sucks. Even though I lost, I'm so proud of my achievement, even though I didn't get the decision.
Now I've talked to a few fighters about this, but before I get started with some of my questions, how's Chatry's speech on Wednesday? I saw that he gives some great motivational speeches before every fight that just gets you pumped up to get going. How is his speech on Wednesday?
Mr. Chatry is one of the greatest promoters that I've ever had the opportunity to fight for. We talk a lot on the private message on Instagram. Every time I send him a message, he always writes me back. He gets into my comment sections on some of my videos. And he's, instead of just being a promoter and a boss, he's more of a friend. It's the only promotion that I've ever fought for where I feel like I'm part of a family instead of just a fighter. I have nothing but the greatest respect for Mr. Chatry. I think he's amazing, what he's doing for the sport, what he's doing for Muay Thai. And I just can't say enough good things about him. He's just a gentleman.
Oh, yeah. Like I watched the little speech that he did from a clip, and it made me want to run through a wall how motivational it was. And he just seems like the greatest guy, and he just has all your guys' best interest in his heart.
Yes, yeah. He just wants to. He wants to greatness. It's all about greatness. You get one opportunity to be great, and this is your shot. So don't waste it. This is your opportunity to shine in front of the world. And I didn't shine. I failed, but I at least I tried failing.
Oh yeah, definitely. They had a lot of good things to say about you, even though you lost. There's a lot of good things over here that were said about your performance. Like you said, you hadn't performed in a while, so just wait until you have another fight with 4 or 5 months to prepare, maybe even less, knowing that you didn't have a 20 month gap difference. I think you're doing a lot better.
Can I tell you a quick story? So I think it was end of February. Nikki Holton called me out on Instagram. Did a clip, and then straight away I got tagged in it and got my attention. And straight away I messaged Mr. Chatry going, "Oh no, the number one guy in the world has just called me out. I haven't had a fight in 20 months. Is it possible to please get a warm up fight first?" And then he said, "Yeah, of course. I was once a fighter as well. I completely understand. Well, we'll get your warm up fight first." So I thought I had a deal. And then so the next day on the ONE Championship site, "Who wants to see John Wayne versus Nikki?" And everyone's like, "Yay!" And then the next day, the greatest fights for 2021, John Wayne versus Nikki. And everyone's like, "Yay!" And then every day it just kept happening and happening and happening. And I was like, "Oh, how am I going to say no now? I can't say no now." So after about 4 or 5 days, it's just this bombardment of John Wayne, Nikki. I wrote to Mr. Chatria a private message saying, "Oh, look, I guess it's got to the point now. I can't say no. I'll take the fight." He said, "Are you serious? Are you crazy?" And I'm like, "Mate, I have to do it. I can't say no. If I say no now, I'm going to be a bitch. And I don't want to be a bitch. That's the last thing I want to do. I want to show the world that I'm still a warrior." He said, he got so excited. He said, "This makes me so happy and so proud. If you take this fight on, you have no idea how exciting it's going to be." So I took the fight. I had approximately 10 weeks to prepare. And everything was perfect. I had hip surgery on the 1st of July. So it was exactly 10 months from surgery to cage. And then 100% pain-free when it comes to shadow boxing, pads, sparring. The only thing I can't do is run. And then my main forms of weight cutting is my running. I usually run 10 kilometers in the morning and 6 kilometers in the afternoon, so 16 kilometers a day, 5 days a week. So that's 80 kilometers a week. And then if I do a 10-week camp, I'm usually running 800 kilometers before a fight. And in that time, I usually go from 85 to about 77, 76. And this time, because I couldn't run, I went from 85 to 83. I'm 4 days out. I'm still 83, and I've got to be 77. And it's like, oh, no, this is not good. This is not good. I've arrived in Singapore, and I'm still 83. So we had and because I don't know if you know the story or not, but I went to Singapore by myself. I didn't take a trainer with me because of the quarantine. I didn't want to have my friend sacrifice 25 days of their life stuck in a hotel room. So I went there by myself, and then we're allowed to book the training room with the treadmill twice a day for 45 minutes. So for 45 minutes, I'd track suit, hoodie, sweatpants, run on the treadmill for 45. And then even fight day, I woke up 77.2, and then I went on the treadmill early in the morning, and I got the 76 even. So I was a kilo under.
Great.
I drank a liter of water because we have the hydration test for when we fight for ONE.
Yes.
And then I thought with a liter of water in my system that I'd be hydrated. And then unfortunately for me, the weigh-in started at ONE, and then I failed the hydration. And then they told me drink 2 liters and then try and run it off again. So I did that again. So I drank, got back on the treadmill for another hour, got down to 76.3, drank the water, and then I still failed. And then they said, "Look, you failed the hydration test. From this moment forward, that doesn't matter what happens. So just keep drinking." So I drank 6 liters of water in a 10-hour period before I passed the hydration. And then that cost me 20% of my prize money. They said, "Look, it's going to cost you 20%, but this is your chance to fight Nikki. So what do you want to do?"
Yeah.
I've come all the way to Singapore. I can't not fight. So so I think I had 10 minutes. I got to 10:50. And I had till 11 p.m. to make weight, to make the hydration. And I finally made the hydration at 10:50. So it took me 10 hours exactly to drink 6 liters and finally pass the test. So it was a nightmare, especially when you're by yourself. There's no one to hold your hand. There's no one there to cheer you on. Come on, you can do it. It was all self-motivated. So one thing I'm proud of, even though everything sucks, is that I rocked up to Singapore like a gunslinger. Yeah. One-man show. I don't need a team. I went there by myself to take on the number one guy in the world in a cage by myself, MMA gloves. Bring it on. I don't care. Did my best. Didn't get the result I wanted, but at least I can say I was brave enough to take the challenge on by myself. So that's one thing I'm proud of.
What kind of response did you get from people when you walked in by yourself, no team?
Everyone thought I was crazy. they're like, where's your cornerman? Cornerman? What cornerman? I don't have a cornerman.
Yeah.
I asked Mr. Chatri if I could borrow one of his Thai trainers from Evolve in Singapore. So they gave me a crew yod. He helped pad to me for like two rounds before the fight started for a warm up, I think. And then he gave me some water after the first round. And that's all he did. That's all he had to do.
That's crazy.
But besides that, I did everything by myself. It's only the number one guy in the world. It's only in a cage, full Muay Thai rules. What can go wrong?
The world's watching, just you.
And apparently getting kicked in the head can go wrong.
Yeah. I remember reading that we watched the PFL last night, and there was a Russian that had to come to Atlantic City. He had to quarantine for 17 days before the fight, and he was by himself because his training crew couldn't get visas. They had visa issues. So he was here by himself for 17 days. One of the fighters that fought in the prelim main event was kind enough to let him train with them. But then he had to basically do the fight on his own because that guy's fight was literally right before his. And then he missed weight by like a couple pounds because he was by himself. Just like you said, like you don't have that. He didn't really have that accountability there. And then, so like he did a good job. He lost, I think, two rounds to one, but he said that he was motivated to fight no matter what because he didn't want to go there and then not fight. So
I was a kilo under. I made weight easy. The only thing was the hydration. Because it was my first time, I've never done the hydration test before. So that was my failure. But when it comes to the actual weighing itself, like I passed, I was a kilo. I did it easy. But first time debut, never done hydration before. Yeah. So next time I know to lose the weight a lot earlier next time. And then because of my hip, I couldn't run. But I don't want to make excuses. But so with Australia, what happens is we do 10 days quarantine in Singapore, and then it's 14 days or 15 days with the good and count the first day. So it's 25 days quarantine. Oh, and then I took one of my boys to fight in Singapore in November. And then because I fought on this show, so technically I've done 50 days quarantine in the last 5 months. In a room by myself for 50 days.
Oh my God.
I actually remember that because Dan Hooker, when he went to Fight Island, he went there quarantined, and then he couldn't leave there for, I think, 3 weeks. Oh, geez, he was quarantined by himself.
I remember that one as well.
Yeah, he couldn't leave Fight Island for 3 weeks.
Jeez, So 50 days. Yeah. What sort of rating is your show? Is it adult rating or PG rating?
No, it's whatever rating. You're good.
So I have very sore PP right now. Being in quarantine for so long.
I bet.
Yep. How's your family handling all this?
I know it's okay. This time, the first time I went, I was cornering one of my fighters, I pretty much did it for free. But this time, because I was actually fighting, now I'm doing it for a purpose. So it's a completely different scenario. I'm training, I'm focusing, I'm losing weight, I'm making money. So I can justify being in quarantine when I see all those zeros in my bank account.
Yeah,
exactly.
And honestly, with a view of a Ferris wheel outside of your room.
And then every time I FaceTime my wife, I haven't had the heart to tell her they're not coming home. I said, I like this place too much. I want to stay here.
But I want to get started with a couple of the questions to get to know you before I pass it off to Jim, because I know he has a couple of questions too. But one of my first questions was, how were you introduced to Taekwondo when you were 11? And then what led you to move to Thailand to learn Muay Thai? I read about that.
Yeah, so what happened was when I was 11, it was the closest martial art to my school, to my home. So I had a passion for martial arts ever since I was about 4 years old. And I lived on, my parents were horse trainers. So I lived on horse properties and always on farms and never in civilization, never in the cities. And then at the age of 11, we finally moved to the city, into Brisbane. And then they said, oh, there's a martial arts school three streets away. And then at 11 years old, it was the first time that my mum gave me permission to leave the house at nighttime by myself to go and train at the Taekwondo school. So I did that for approximately a year and a half. Did a few gradings, went into a few tournaments. It was amazing. And then as an 11-year-old kid, I just had all these aspirations of going to a career. And I've seen the videos of more standing in line doing the katas and breaking boards. But, oh, this is me. I want to be a Taekwondo. This is all I want to do. And then, unfortunately, the Taekwondo school, they couldn't keep the students up, and they couldn't quite afford the rent. So they moved out. And then approximately 6 months later, kickboxing started in exactly the same hall when I was about 13. So I thought, oh, this isn't Taekwondo. I'll do the kickboxing until I find another Taekwondo school. And then I did my first kickboxing class, and I was like, this is amazing. This is so cool. All of a sudden, we can punch to the head. We can do all this crazy stuff. It was just so much, so mind-blowing. So I thought, and then it just happened the movie Kickboxer came out at the same time. And I went to the movie. And this is when I was at the movies. So I got to sit there with my popcorn. And here's the story of a gentleman goes to Thailand, fights the Thais, fights the most scary guy. It's like, this is my life story. I want to go to Thailand. I want to fight the scariest guy. I want to do this. I want to do that. And then it just so happened, I kept training. I won an Australian title at 17. I won a South Pacific title at 19. And then the South Pacific title was really tough. I got dropped in the second round with a leg kick. And then ended up coming back and knocking the guy out with 30 seconds to go in the fifth. And then my Thai sponsor was so proud of my performance. He said, oh, look, you showed a lot of heart last night. How would you like to go to Bangkok and learn from the Thais to become one of the greatest? So that was going to be amazing. He said, I'll tell you what I do. If you can organize your passport, I'll do the rest. So I went down to the post office, did all the paperwork, sent it away. A week later, the passport rocks up. I go to my sponsor's restaurant. Hey, my passport came. He grabbed me by the wrist. And he led me down to the street to the travel agent. And he said, I want a 6-month open ticket to Thailand, please, for this young gentleman. And then as he's buying the ticket, he said, you have to promise me one thing. You have to stay 6 months. If you come home, if you can't handle it and it's too hard and you want to come home within that time, me and you are done. Don't come and see me. But if you can last 6 months, you'll make me one of the proudest people in Australia. So I ended up staying 6 months. I slept on a wooden floor for 6 months. I don't know if you know about my toilet, but in Thailand they have a squat toilet, and there's no toilet paper, so you have to pour water into your hand to wipe your bottom, and then when you shower, you stand up, so you wet yourself with the water, you lather up with soap, and then you use a little bucket to wet yourself off again. Very primitive. There's no furniture. You sit on the floor to eat your rice, and there's rice for breakfast, rice for dinner. You train 3 hours in the morning, 3.5 hours at night, 7 days a week. So I ended up having five fights, five wins, four knockouts in that 6-month period. I came back to Australia just in limbo, not knowing what I was going to do. It's like, oh, what, now what happens? So, and then eventually a few weeks later, the Thai camp where my sponsor said, oh, is there any chance you could please send him back? We think he has potential to possibly be a star. So Richard, my sponsor, asked me, hey, do you want to go back to Thailand? That's like, mate, do I want to go back to Thailand? Of course I want to go back to Thailand. So he said, okay, this time you have to promise me 1 year. 6 months was fun, but now we've done 6 months. Now let's do 1 year. So in 1997, I went for 1 year. I ended up, I won my first five fights straight away. So now I've won I won my first four. So now I'm fighting Lumpini. I'm fighting in the stadiums. I'm making the front covers of the first Western to make the front covers of the magazines. I'm fighting on Thai TV. I'm now known as the Australian dangerous kangaroo in Thailand. it was amazing. The training was so hard and so crazy, and I got so homesick. And then every time I think, this is it, this is my last fight, I can't do this anymore, I've got to go home. And then I'd fight, and then I'd win, and I'd make the magazines, and I'd make the newspapers and the TV, and it's like, this is amazing, I want to stay. And then I start doing camp again, it's like, oh, this sucks, I want to go home. And then I'd win again, I'd make the magazines again. It's like, it was so addictive. And then it got to the stage where I lived, I was the only Westerner in my whole area. So I'd go in months at a time without seeing another Westerner. So it's like, oh man, I got to learn this language because otherwise I'm screwed. So every day I try and learn five words. I'd ask questions, what's this? What's this? I'd work on those five words over the night, and the next day I knew five words. And then after 6 months, all of a sudden I'm having conversations. And then after a year, I used to buy the Thai CDs for their songs. So I'd press play, press pause, and I'd write in English. I'd do a translation. And then I'd go to karaoke bars, and I'd be the only Westerner in a karaoke bar. And I'd ask if I could sing a song. And I'd sing the song in Thai. And then all of a sudden, that one person come to the dance floor, two people come. And next minute, the whole dance floor would be full with me singing Thai songs. It was just so bizarre, but so cool. And then the guy that was running the karaoke, he'd go, do you know any more Thai songs? I said, mate, I know the whole album. He goes, can you do any more? Mate, you let me know. I'll do as many as you want. So I'd do like three or four songs in a row, and then the crowd would just go crazy. It's like, this is bizarre. This is so amazing. It was such the greatest time of my life. I thought, when I retire from Muay Thai, I'm going to be a Thai singer. But you soon go out of that, though.
Oh, there's still a chance.
Yeah, well, maybe. Who knows?
They're waiting for you.
Yeah. their songs are so deep too. When you're in the all the Westerner songs are like doom 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 doom, whereas all Thai songs is very emotional, and they have all those crying and the hand motions and all that. Once you get the motions down with the song too, it was like
Are there videos of ever. This?
It was so cool.
Are there videos of you singing? Because I need to see those.
Back in them days, we're talking the 90s now. We had the old camera phones like these ones back in those days. There's no Nokias or Apple phones back then. Jeez.
We got to find somebody.
Back in the old days. So in the 90s, if I wanted to talk to my parents, I'd have to buy a phone card. And the phone card would cost 1,000 baht, which is about $50. And it only lasts 10 minutes. So if I wanted to talk to my mum, or I'd have to write a letter, I'd go to the post office. It would take a week for the letter to arrive, and it'd take a week for I get a so it was a 2 week turnaround between letters.
Oh, man.
To correspond with my mum. And then let's say, for instance, did you gentlemen know about Lumpini Stadium? It's the number one stadium in Bangkok.
Yeah,
number one stadium in Bangkok. And then I'd write to mum, hey mum, you wouldn't believe it. I'm the first Australian to ever fight Lumpini, and I won by 4th-round knockout. Send the letter. 2 weeks later, congratulations, son. and like these days, if you do something like that on Facebook and Instagram and everything, and you'd be like, you'd be a superstar in like five minutes.
But and you get a response back quickly,
And then my mum has no idea about Muay Thai. She has no idea what's going on. So she's like, oh, good son. Proud of you.
Send this long letter and you just get an okay back.
She's just glad that you're having a good time.
There's no emojis back then either, so I couldn't even get an emoji.
Now, I read that after you came back from there, you opened up a gym and then you started learning boxing. Do you consider yourself a jack of all trades since you're learning all these different abilities? And then what kept you motivated each time you learned something new?
So I did. I stayed in Thailand for 4 years until the end of 99. And then I came back to Australia, opened the gym here on the Gold Coast. That was going really well. Won a world title, well, my first world title in the year 2000. And then a friend of mine was boxing at the time. And I've been in Thailand. I fought in Japan. I had about 40 fights by this stage. And then my friend was boxing. And then because he was boxing, he was making the papers and on the TV and getting all these interviews. And it's like, this sucks. I'm yeah. doing all this. I'm fighting all these killers. And I can't even get a quote in the paper, let alone a front page or a back page. Screw this. I'm going to go to boxing. So I retired from boxing. I boxed for approximately a year. I had, I think, 9 fights in a year. 9 fights, 8 wins, 8 KOs. So I end up having my boxing record currently is 14 fights, 11 wins, 10 knockouts. So I won the Australian boxing title. But when I won that title, I was 8 fights, 8 knockouts. And then I lost a couple of – I lost 3 over 12 rounds. 3 fights on points over 12 rounds. And then my last fight was a boxing fight before the one fight. November 2019, I fought a gentleman here in Australia called Anthony Mundine, who's a superstar here. He's a former 3-time world champion. And I beat him on points over 10 rounds in end of 2019. So that was probably one of my biggest highlights. Because in Australia, Anthony Mundine's a super-duper star.
Yeah.
So to beat him here in Australia is massive.
Yeah.
And then I thought I was done. I called retirement. My hip was so sore that I couldn't weight bear. I couldn't walk. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't. It hurt to breathe. It hurt to blink. It was just pain all the time. And then I finally got that fixed in July. And then I thought I was done. And then 10 months later, here I am in the cage fighting the number one guy in the world, Nicky Holtz. And it's like, it's just a dream come true. Like I said before. I didn't win the fight, but I won in life.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah. Like I was amazed when I read all that. I'm like, geez.
Considering I was so depressed. My wife was so worried that she'd come home from one day and find me not alive because I really hit depression. I go to a really dark place when I'm not training and not fighting. It's the only thing I know. It's the only thing I love. I love my family, but at the same time, fighting is everything.
Yeah.
Like, everything. And then if that's not in my life, I don't know what to do. And then luckily, I had this second chance of meeting Mr. Chatry and getting a contract and fighting Nicky and fighting in a cage and fighting in front of the world. And it's just I'm so humbled that I get another chance to shine.
Yeah. How quick do you want to get back in there?
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get home first, right? And then get back in.
No, I don't even want to go home. I just go straight back to Singapore right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How support?
I was very lucky to speak to Mr. Chatry maybe a day, 2 days after my fight. I'm just on the private messenger. And I said, I know I can do better. I've had 20 months off. I didn't have a warm-up fight before I fought Nicky. I know I can do so much better. Please, if I can have if you can promise me 2 fights, if I can have 2 fights for 2 wins, can you promise me a rematch? And I even private messaged Nicky as well. I said, Nicky, come on, mate. And both Nicky and Mr. Chatry both agreed if I can get 2 wins in a row, they're going to grant me my wish. So I know I can do so much better than that. I know my performance was sub John Wayne Parr.
Nice.
To use my own name.
Nice.
That was funny. That was good. Yeah.
There were so many. There were so many roadblocks. There were so many roadblocks that went into this fight.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah. No idea. So what happened? Another story. So we have to do a COVID test before we go to Singapore.
Yeah.
So I did the COVID test. Everything's good. I get my results. Congratulations, you're negative. So I send the email to the ONE Championship. Good news, guys. Book the ticket. I'm negative. And then the next day they message me going, oh, no. You had your test 75 hours before the flight. Technically, you have to have it 72 hours before the flight.
Oh,
you have to hurry, go back and do another one. Otherwise, they won't let you on the plane. It's like, what? This is like 24 hours. I'm going to Singapore in 24 hours. And they go, you need it. You need to go right now. Right now. So I rush back to the COVID. I get another two sticks up the nose, another. So two COVID tests in 48 hours. I go to the airport. I still haven't got the results for the second one yet. I show them the results from the first one, and they let me on the plane. Okay. And it wasn't until I arrived in Singapore and turned my phone on, I get the results. Oh, good news, you're negative. It's like, ah, oh, geez. So at Singapore airport, before you collect your luggage, you have to do another COVID test. So I go to Singapore, I do the test. Everything's good. Get my bag, go to the hotel. Hotel's amazing. Everything's good. Wake up in the morning. So I booked a training session at 9. And I get a phone call at 8:50. I'm thinking, oh, I must be the chaperone to come to collect me from my room to take me to the training center. And it's the secretary from One Championship saying, oh, John, we've got some bad news. Your COVID test came back positive. So what? I got an email only an hour ago from the same company saying that I was negative. Oh, no, that's come back positive. We need to know what seat number you were on the plane to let everyone else on the plane know that you're a positive. It's like, what are you talking about? So I said, no, wait. Let me forward you the email that I just received. So I sent her the email. She said, all right, let me bring you back. So there was a half an hour period. I'm on my bed, just hands on my head going, I can't believe this is happening. I've trained for the last 10 weeks. I'm fit as a fiddle. I'm fighting Nick and Holson. I'm having my debut, and I'm freaking positive, what's going on? And then she rings me back going, oh, there was a mix-up at the lab. You're fine. You're okay. It was someone else that had a similar name. You're perfect. Don't worry about it. That's, oh, Jesus Christ.
Getting yourself worked up.
What's going on?
So there's somebody with a similar name?
I have no idea, but somehow or other, it was just an oopsies. Just an oopsies on our part. So that was my first. I got to do two COVID tests. Second one, I'm positive for freaking the COVID. Then I'm not positive. Then I'm like a negative. Now I'm training by myself. I do all this, book all the training rooms every single day, get my weight right down. I go from 83 to 76. And then it takes me 10 hours to get the hydration.
Jesus.
And then, so next day's fight day. I meet my Thai trainer for the first time. Hi, how you going? Nice to meet you. Any chance you give me some water between rounds? That's pretty much, what do you do?
Yeah.
And then did some little bit of warm up in the back room. And of course, you never trained with this guy before either. Pads was terrible because we don't know each other's style. We don't know what we're doing. It's like, oh, this is so shit.
Yeah.
And then, go out and then did my best, had a crack.
Yes.
In Australia, have a crack. That's what you can do. Just knuckle down and have a swing. Unfortunately, got caught. And then I had, because Nicky's got such amazing boxing, I was so concentrating on watching his hands and staying at range. I didn't even see the first spin, the first one knocking down. And then it wasn't until I watched the replay that I noticed I got knocked down in the second round with a left hook. I said, oh, I didn't even know I got dropped the second time. I only thought I got dropped twice, but apparently I got dropped three times. It's like, oh, maybe it was a good idea that I stopped the fight because I had no idea that it happened. And then the head kick, of course. The head kick was I remember getting kicked, and I remember the referee sliding on his knees, waving off, and I've gone a step up to get back up, and he's pushed my chest down back to the canvas. And that's when your heart breaks just knowing that the dream's over.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can't do this to me. Please. No. And it's like, no, it's done. It's done. It's like, fuck. And then just heartbroken. And then I got back to the room. And then luckily, like I said, I'm just so happy that I had so much support on the social media with everyone just giving me a pat on the back and lifting up my spirits and just let me know that even though I lost, that I didn't lose any fans. In fact, I probably have more fans now from the loss than I do from a win, which is bizarre. Just because I showed heart and I showed that warrior spirit that I didn't want to quit. And I think people appreciate someone that a proper fighter, a real fighter, that you've got two options. You can either sit there and give up or fight to the death. And if he had let me, I would have kept going for sure. But it is what it is.
Yeah. I know you gained more fans even off of a loss. Everyone loves Warriors, like you said.
Yeah, I'm so humbled that one of my friends was saying he had goosebumps when he seen me get dropped for the spin kick and see me jump straight back up and then run at Nikki. He goes, man, that was so inspirational. And it's like, it's just stuff. It's just those little things that make it worth it. Even though I lost, I just feel so proud that I had that made the right decision to still try and win.
Yeah,
winning's everything. I don't care if I get dropped. I can get dropped. I can still win. I can get cut. I can still win. I don't care. Winning's more important than pain. So yeah.
Yeah, but you know, your outlook after a loss is so much different than what we see from other fighters who, like, they go in a shell, they reevaluate their love of fighting, and you're so positive about this. You know, this is a lesson for anybody who's watching this to just deal with it. Go with it. It happens.
Yeah. I want to be that inspiration for the young fighters and for young kids coming up that show that, Israel Alazania said, he said, dare to be great. Dare to be great. If you fail trying, it's better than not trying at all. Yep. So I tried, I fought the number one guy in the world after 20 months off. I had a crack. If I had a one by myself, it would have been such an amazing story. It would have been it would have been folklore. It would have been such a one of those ones over the campfire. Oh, I remember that time. Yeah. I went to Singapore by myself and fought a guy after hip surgery and won. But unfortunately, I didn't have my happy ending that all fairy tales have. So
yeah, but the second fight will. The second fight will definitely have that happy ending.
I hope so. I hope so as well. I just hope I get I want one of those one medallions that the ladies handed. I seen that after the fight. It's like, I didn't realize how bad I wanted one until I seen one after the fight. It's like, oh man, just let me feel it. I want to feel what the winner medal feels like, because
they look awesome.
I didn't get the hug, the ring card girl. I didn't get to feel the medallion. I didn't get.
Yep.
I just want to shine. I just want Mr. Chatry to be proud of me. I want him to not have him disappointed that he signed a 44-year-old to the company. I want him to be proud to say, I believed in John Wayne. I knew that he was going to be great, and I knew he would entertain. And if I can make Mr. Chatry happy, that's all I care about. I don't care about of course I care about the fans. I want to entertain the fans, of course. But Mr. Chatry is the one that stuck his neck out for me and gave me this opportunity. So I can't thank him enough for everything. He is my my guardian angel.
A question I had for you, knowing that it was on over here in the States, it was a big thing. It was on TNT. It was here at night. How was the time difference for you? Because I know over there, were the fights on in the morning? Were they on in the afternoon when you guys went on?
About mid-morning.
How is that compared to fighting at night by over there in Singapore or in Australia?
Yeah, I'm definitely a night owl. You have time to carb up. You have time to get ready. You have time to prep during the day. Put on a Rocky movie. do all the amp stuff. Do all the crazy. And then you wake up, wipe your eyes, brush your teeth, and it's like, it's time to go. So it's friggin', I guess we're going. Yeah. And then you sort of have no choice. It's just like, bang, 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 bang. And next minute, you're in the cage. So it is what it is. I got no excuses. Even though I lost, I loved every second from the moment I hopped on the plane all the way until I arrived back here again. It was just so amazing to be part of the promotion. I wanted to debut for so long. I wanted to fight for one championship for so long, and then I finally got the contract because I was with Bellator for so long as well. I finally got out of my contract, and I finally got onto one. I finally got to have my debut. I finally got to step into that cage. It didn't matter if I won or lost. I just wanted to step into that cage and just represent and just to experience the exhilaration of what it was like to fight for one championship, and I got to do it. So and against the killer, I didn't just get to fight anybody. I just a prelim, I got to fight the guy that everyone was scared of, and I was like, I'm not scared. I'll have a crack. So I'm like I said, I'm shattered, but I'm proud.
Regardless of the outcome, it was a great debut.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I can't wait to come back again and avenge my loss against somebody and show the one audience that I'm a much better fighter than how I performed on the first night. I know I can be more violent. I know I can be more fluid. I know I can have more cardio. I know I can hit harder. After 20 months being out, I was just off by that little bit. So I know now that I got a little bit of cage time, I think my next performance, I have a bit more confidence within myself, especially if I Nikki. After 20 months, like, it's a big deal to fight the number one guy in the world, like, straight up, and then pumping myself up and then just giving myself mantras. Dare to be great. Dare to be great. This is my destiny. I can do this. Every time I got a little bit doubtful or overwhelmed, I just reassert myself that I know I can do this. I know I'm great. I know I can be great. I have to go and prove that I'm great. I can't pretend that I'm great. I have to go and prove that I'm great. So I have to step into that cage. I can't talk about it. I can't be one of these Facebook guys and have this illusion. I want to go out there and prove to the world that I'm John Wayne and I'm a world champion.
Yeah, you're a legend for a reason.
Thank you. Yes.
Now you talked about Bellator. I know you fought three times in there. Did they not offer you a contract to stay, or was it your decision not to stay with Bellator?
I had four fights. I had three fights contract, and then there was a 16 month period where there was nothing. I was constantly emailing, and then eventually I got my fight for Ryzen and Bellator have a mutual agreement where they
share fighters.
Yeah. So I got the fight for Ryzen, and then Mr. Scott Coker, he was amazing as well. I love Scott. Scott was so cool. But he said, "Oh, your contract's up. You're more than welcome to go and fight for one if you want to go fight for one now." And the opportunity came. Mr. Chatry offered me the opportunity to come and fight for the company, and then I couldn't be happier. Because the kickboxing scene in Bellator, it just faded. It just didn't happen. They had a couple of good shows there, and then it just disappeared.
Yeah.
Just like, oh no, what am I gonna do? I'm not in my prime, but at the same time, I need to be active. And then because there was no fights, and I'm just so happy Scott let me go. And then to seeing what Mr. Chatry is doing with Cage Muay Thai, it's just like such an opportunity for Muay Thai to shine. The world doesn't know what Muay Thai is until now, and I can't not be on it because this is my life. Everything revolves around Muay Thai, so I have to get on this show, and I'm so glad that I finally got the opportunity to. So do you guys know about Cage Muay Thai? You guys know how I started this thing back in 2012?
A little bit.
So 2012, I had this desire. I got to fight in the cage. I have to experience what this is like. I've had 100 plus fights in the ring with boxing gloves on. I see these guys on TV fighting in a cage with MMA gloves. So I got to do this. So I'm laying in bed. I went and tried jiu-jitsu. And my very first jiu-jitsu class, I snapped my finger in half.
Oh.
I thought, this sucks. Jiu-jitsu sucks. I don't want to do jiu-jitsu. I don't want to break my finger again. This is dumb. So how can I go in the cage without having to learn jiu-jitsu? And I thought, well, I do Muay Thai shows already. So instead of hiring a ring, why don't I just hire a cage and I'll just do it myself? And then I looked on YouTube to see if anyone was doing it. And there was a few other promotions that were doing kickboxing in the cage with big gloves on. And then I was like, oh, that looks so dumb. the big gloves in the cage. Just how am I supposed to get the respect from the MMA audience if I'm wearing big gloves and everyone else wearing small gloves? Everyone's going to think it's not going to look cool. Yeah. So if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it in MMA gloves. It has to be MMA gloves. So I started this in 2012. Not only did I promote the show, but I fought the main event as well. And we ended up doing 10 shows, and I fought on 8 of them, winning 7 of the 8. The only person I lost to in the cage was Brad Riddell, who fights for UFC now.
Yeah,
so we fought twice. I beat him the first time in the ring, and the second time I got the rematch him on my show, and he beat me in the cage. All the rest I won. And then before I know it, all of a sudden, won championships doing cage Muay Thai. It's like, hey, that's my idea. That's what I was doing. And it's like, I got to get on this show. They're doing cage Muay Thai. I'm the one that come up with it. It would be rude if they didn't sign me.
Yeah.
So, and then it just so happened. I was praying, and someone heard my prayers, and then I got the fight. So it all started. Oh yeah. So when I first came up with the idea in 2012, back in the old days when there was forums. I don't know if you remember the old forum.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I put on the forum saying, "Hey, I've got this idea. I want to do kickboxing in a cage, MMA gloves on." And the amount of criticism and just the hatred of, I can't believe you're the guy that wants to do this after everything you've done in Thailand. You're trying to bastardize the sport. How could you? You're a disgrace. You make me sick. And then someone even came up with the quotation, "The only reason why you're trying to do this is to make money." So, no shit.
Who wouldn't?
So everyone hated it. Everyone hated it. And I thought, nah, screw it. I'm going to do it anyway. And as soon as I did it, everyone goes, oh, this is amazing. This is so cool. That's what I was trying to tell you guys. I knew this was going to be awesome. And then, and now I look at it 10 years later, and now we have the elite of the elite fighting on the world stage, fighting on American TV, on TNT channel. Holy crap. All for my idea of laying in bed at night thinking, I got an idea. And now all of a sudden, look where it is. It's so humbling and so crazy and so cool.
Yeah.
That, it's just to see something materialize right before your eyes. Well, 10 years later, but at the same time, it's still freaking awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so
the last question I had before I passed off to Jim, what moment in your career do you value the most amongst all other?
So I have two. So I fought a gentleman in 1997. It was my first A-class Thai fighting on Thai TV. And I had 9 fights for 9 wins, and he was my 10th fight. And then if I had beaten him, my next fight would have been for a Lumpini title. And then, unfortunately, he was A-class. He was really good, southpaw. I was doing really well. And then he cut me across the eyebrow and then under the eye, where I had to receive 21 stitches. And the fight got stopped. The cut was too big. So 3 years later, it's called the King's Birthday in Bangkok, where they have it's a promotion in the park. Have you ever seen the movie Kickboxer?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So do you know at the start of the Kickboxer where they're doing pads in the park and then they're going, none of that tip-tap shit? You know, that's,
yeah.
I fought in that park 4 times.
Oh, wow.
So they get over 100,000 people come to that park to watch the Muay Thai for the King's Birthday. And then there was my 3rd time on it, and I got to rematch this gentleman that cut me in 97. This is in year 2000. And I ended up beating him every round and winning his world title in front of 100,000 people live on Thai TV. And then that was 2000. Then in 2004, I get an email from the Thai promoter, number one promoter in Thailand. He said, oh, we're holding this event. It's $1 million baht for the winner, which is approximately 35,000 Australian, a world title and a trophy from the Prime Minister of Thailand. It's an 8-man tournament. So 3 fights, 1 day. So yeah, for sure. So I flew to Thailand, trained for 3 weeks. So my first fight was a Russian. I beat him on points. My second fight was John Charles Skabowski from France. I knocked him out in the 3rd. And then the final, I had the fight against a Thai that had already beaten me 3 times in a row.
Oh, wow.
And then I finally beat him. And then I won a $1 million baht, world title, the trophy from the Prime Minister of Thailand, live on Thai TV, prime time. free to air. It was just the most crazy. And the next day, went down to the news agent, and every single front page and every single magazine. And then I was walking down the streets, and tuk-tuk would stop and screech their tires to try and get a photo with me. And taxi drivers were stopping, and Thai people were coming out of shops. It's like, this is amazing. This is like this is the dream. This is the dream. It was just so crazy. It was so cool. Out of my 10 world titles, the 2 world titles I won in Bangkok are definitely the most special, because to make it there is and then you see all these other Westerners, they go to Samui and Phuket and they fight on the islands and the Westerners and they win the world. But to do it in Bangkok on Thai TV in front of 100,000 Thai people, when, imagine being 100,000 Thai people and you're the white guy and you win.
Right.
And you win. It's like, yes.
Talk about pressure.
So the gentleman that I fought, his name's Orono. So every time he fights, the crowd goes crazy. Orono, Orono. And then for 5 rounds, it was silence. And that's like, oh, this is awesome. This is so cool. Nice. And then, I beat their star. It was so phenomenal. It was so crazy. It was so cool. I've been lucky to win 10 world titles, but the ones in Thailand are the most special just because it's Thailand.
Birthplace of the sport.
That's my two most prestigious.
I have one question, because we covered a lot of the stuff that I wanted to ask you. What's the roadmap to winning the one championship? I know you need 2 fights. Do you have people that you want to fight, or is it just next one up? Just go at it.
I just want to prove to the. I'm 40. I'll be 45 next month. So I know time's not on my side. I'm fighting Father Time. I know that I'm getting older. I know that eventually everything's going to start slowing down and things are going to start hurting soon. I just want to go and have some fun. I just want to go out there and shine. I just want a couple wins. I just want to prove to the world, to the one championship audience that everything I've done, I don't want to not be appreciated for it, because before one championship came, Muay Thai was such a back alley sport. No one cared. Like I was saying before about my friend that was doing the boxing, mm-hmm. He had a couple of boxing fights and he was a superstar overnight. And I was doing all this stuff all over the world fighting Muay Thai and nothing. And now all of a sudden with one championship, here we are. And like I said before, so after Nikki, without an exaggeration, I had 3,000 private messages waiting for me when I turned my phone on. Wow. And it took me 4 days to answer every single one of them. Even if it was with an emoji or with a thank you, I answered 3,000 private messages on my phone.
That's so great of you.
I'm in quarantine. I've got nothing to do.
Yeah, so. Right.
You know Gary Vee? Gary Vee, he's the guy that's always like, take the time, answer the people, appreciate your fans. So I answered 3,000 private messages just to say thank you for your comment or thank you for your support. And it's just so humbling to finally be appreciated after 34 years in the sport, to finally get the recognition that I think I deserve it after 10 world titles.
Absolutely. And it's going to grow.
I see the UFC guys, and I see all these other superstars, and they can't walk down the street, and they're driving Lamborghinis, and they're living in mansions, and they can't. I was lucky to go and train with George St. Pierre in Montreal, and walking the street with him was like walking with Elvis.
Yeah,
he couldn't walk 200 meters without. We were catching taxis to go 200 meters. I said, why don't we just walk there? I can see the shop. I can see it from here. We just walk there. He goes, it's 2 hours. And then he goes, let's try. And sure enough, every single one coming to that shop.
So, oh, my goodness.
Man, I know you're George, but at the same time, you're no better than me. I've done just as much as you. I train just as hard as you do. I've won 3 times the amount of fights you have. Why am I getting all the respect that you're getting? I don't want to sound like I'm jealous, but at the same time, it's like,
yeah.
What's going on?
You're putting all the work in 10 world titles, like you said.
I'm fighting like all the time. Like I got a fight 8-9 times a year to survive. Like, they get to fight twice a year and they have more money than they don't know what to do with. I have to fight 9 times a year just to pay my rent and get food on the table for my kids.
Yeah.
So the money difference, this so, but now with one, finally, it's amazing money. Recognition's out of control, and just happy. I'm just so proud to be part of the company.
Well, I can't wait for your next fights. You have a fan in me. You've had a fan before one, but I can't wait to see your fights. It was an honor to talk to you, John.
Oh, no, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's so cool to have a chat.
Absolutely.
Yep. I want to thank you so much for coming on. I know we went over what we were going to do, but I'm glad to hear all the stories from you. And like you said, you gained a big fan in me.
Oh, no worries. Thank you so much. I might be almost 45 years old, but my passion for Muay Thai and martial arts is, I feel like an 11-year-old kid still. When I first started, I have the same passion. I still have the same dream of being great. I want to leave a legacy, and I want to be a role model. I want to be that guy to want to inspire people to not only just Muay Thai, but just martial arts. I think martial arts is really good for the soul, mind, body, soul. And it gives you a purpose. Instead of sitting in front of the TV, watching the news and being depressed about how bad everything is, the news just constantly bombards you. But when you go to the gym, your mind's clear, you're thinking about technique, you're getting fitter, you feel healthy, you feel alive, you feel amazing. And then I just want everyone to have that endorphin rush of martial arts. It's that's a beautiful thing.
I agree.
How do you feel about training the stars of tomorrow?
Oh, I when I got the change, George. So I did 10 seminars in 10 days in Canada, and I had 2 days spare. And then they said, "What do you want to do to kill time?" So, oh, I have no idea. I've never been to Canada. I don't know what. They said, "Oh, do you know who George St. Pierre is? Would you like to meet George?" I'd love to meet George. That'd be so cool. So they rang Faraz at TriStar. They said, "Hey, we've got John Wayne here. Is there any chance you'd come down to meet George?" I said, "Funny enough, we have Muay Thai sparring tomorrow. Does John Wayne want to come down and do some sparring?" That's like, holy shit. Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. So I jumped in the car. We drove from Ottawa to Montreal. We rock up to a TriStar. And then you walk in the room. And it's like, oh, man. And you just see everyone that you see on TV. It's like, oh, I'm so out of my element right now. This is so scary. And then Faraz has got his little whiteboard there. All right, so the first spar is John, George, you're going to go with John Wayne. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is crazy. This is crazy. I'm sparring George. And then he has no idea who I am either. So I've done all this stuff. I've had all these fights. I've had like 70 fights by now. And I touched gloves with George. And then before we start, I'm like a little girl. "Oh, George, it's so nice to meet you. I can't believe this is happening. Thank you so much for the opportunity." And he's just looking at me going, "Who's this kid? Ah, here we go." So then the spar starts and he throws something and I check it. And he throws a jab and I parry it. And he does something else. And it's like, and I thought, fuck it. I'm going to have a crack. So I charge forward and I start landing. And next minute I'm chasing George from one side of the cage, the other side of the cage, the other side of the cage. And then after the spar, he's like, "Who the fuck are you?" He goes, "It felt like I was surrounded like by 10 people." It's like, "What the hell was that?" So at one stage during the spar, he threw a lazy jab. So I've parried the jab and I've fired through with a head kick. And then I've placed my shin on his neck and I just left it there. And then the whole gym has stopped. And it was like one of those scenes in the bar where the music stops. And everyone's turning around and my shin's on George's neck and George's eyes are like deer eyes in the headlights. And then after the spa, after everything's sort of cooling down, George walks up to me and goes, "Hey, I just want to thank you for not knocking me out, because if that hadn't been anyone else, that could have been their claim to fame." Yeah. And you just put it there. I said, "Oh, yeah, that's okay. I just wanted to show you that I could. It's all right. It's just what I do."
Yeah.
And then we took some photos and everything else. And then about 3 months goes past. I'm back in Australia. I'm on the computer and I'm sitting there and the phone rings. It's an international call. And then it was Faraz from TriStar. "Hey, John Wayne, look, I'm sitting here beside George St. Pierre. He was so impressed with your spa. He wants to know if you'd like to come back to Montreal and train him personally for 2 weeks before he fights Johnny Hendricks."
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's like, hang on. And I asked my wife, hey, Angie, can I go to Montreal and train George for 2 weeks? Yeah, you do what you like. Yeah, sure. When? How about 2 days? Sure. So next thing, I'm on a plane. I fly to Montreal. And I get to Montreal, and George St. Pierre is at the airport waiting for me.
Wow.
And it's like, holy shit. Holy shit. So I got my bag. We jump in the car. We drive to drive to Montreal. He goes, oh, I'm going to put you in this hotel. This is where I like to keep Freddie Roach and all my other sparring partners. I'm like, holy shit, Freddie Roach. you're kidding me. Are you kidding me right now? So we stay in Montreal. We train. We spar. Every time we spar, let's spar today, George. And George's like, oh, no. You're just going to bash me again. Yes.
Yeah, that's what sparring is.
That's what I'm going to do. Yes. So, so we did this for a week and everything's going cool. Everyone's going amazing. And then George goes, hey, out of curiosity, have you ever been in New York? I've never been. He goes, you want to go today? To New York? Sure. He rings his travel agent, books 2 tickets. 3 hours later, we're in the air. We fly to New York. We're in New York. We're staying in freaking New York. This is insane.
That's crazy.
We stay at the Marriott. We got a room each. We train at Renzo Gracie's gym in New York.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
We stay there for a week. I'm walking in the room. I'm seeing all these superstars again. This is mind-blowing. This is out of control. I'm bashing George and sparring. I'm holding pads for him. It's just amazing. Unfortunately, I got there week 12 before the fight. So I got the training for week 12, week 11. I go home to Australia. He goes back. And then the gentleman that was training him after me, our styles conflicted each other. George ended up doing everything opposite to what I was trying to teach him. Ended up having a really hard fight with Johnny, which he shouldn't have had. But he won, which was good. But at the same time, if we had done what we were doing, I think it would have won a lot easier. But George is such the coolest guy you've ever met too. Because let's say 10 people come to dinner and then you're looking at their menu and you know George is paying too. So it's like you're looking at the steaks and there's a $30 steak and there's a $50 steak. And because you know George is paying, it's like, oh, can I get the $30 steak, please? George is going, what are you doing? You got to try the $50. The $50 steak's amazing. Like, can you get him the $50 steak? He wants the $50. Get him the $50. It's like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is awesome. This is so cool. And then the check will come and he won't even look at the bill. He just put his gold card into the little thing and away they go. And it's like, so it was a la carte dinners for breakfast, lunch and dinner, staying at the Marriott. We're in New York. We're doing pads. We're training. We're sparring. This is like the greatest trip ever. So you want to hear another funny story? So 10 weeks later, George is fighting Johnny. And then a couple of days before he fights, I get an email from this lady. She goes, so are you going to be in George's corner? So, unfortunately, nah. He's got his team. I asked him if he wanted to go, but he said, if I go on the team, that means he has to kick somebody off. And they've had a team for so long that it wouldn't be right. So, and this random lady, she goes, you deserve to be there. After everything you've done for George, you deserve to be on. And I want to buy you a plane ticket to be in the audience. I was like, are you serious? Really? And then, so as I'm talking to her, she goes, Isle of Window. I said, this is happening, isn't it? She goes, I've already booked it. You want Isle of Window? Isle? She goes, good news. I've just booked the ticket, and they're offering a special. For every ticket, you get 2 nights free at the MGM. So I got you 2 nights at the MGM as well. I was like, holy shit.
Wow.
And then, do you remember the young gentleman from Mexico that was fighting for UFC? I forgot the young kid's name. Young Mexican kid anyway. And then he knew that I was going to be there. So he asked me if I could walk him out to the scales in front of everybody. Oh, John Wayne, I'm a big fan. Any chance you walk me to this?
Is it Yair?
No. The other gentleman, the other young kid. I'm so embarrassed that I forgot his name.
Brandon Moreno?
No. I don't think he fights for him anymore.
Okay.
Starts with a G. This is back in 2014-ish. So I walk this kid out. You get to meet the Dana White. Holy crap, Dana White on the scales. Hey, doing this is cool. And then watch George fly. Come home. It was just like the most unbelievable experience of my whole life. Not only as a fighter, but to be a trainer and train George and John Danaher in New York. He goes, I can't believe the transformation that you've had with George in a 7-day period. His timing, his power, his technique, everything is just amazing. I can't believe the transformation in such a short period of time. So hopefully there's other opportunities in the future to train other stars. But that was one of the most craziest, awesome times of my life. So I'm That's happy awesome. To chat with you. So it was really cool.
Absolutely.
Was it Gian Valente? Was that his name?
Goye. I got his shorts at the gym too, and they hang up on my wall as well. I can't believe I've got his name.
It's all right. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Such a cool experience. George is the man. Even though he's the super duper duper star, he's just the humblest. Every time I give him a technique, he'd say yes sir, no sir, okay sir. And it's like, I can't believe you called me sir. Right? I'm just Johnny. Yeah. You don't have to be respectful. Just call me Johnny. It's all good. You're George St. Pierre. You don't have to call me Johnny. You can't call me sir.
This is mind blowing. Always hear good stories about George.
Yeah, he's
from everybody.
And Faraz is awesome too. Everyone at TriStar was amazing. TriStar is such a cool gym. Everyone, even though everyone was a super duper duper star, everyone was so humble and so cool and got to spy everybody and got to hang out and high fives. And it's just my adventures have just been so lucky. The everyone in the community has been amazing.
Are you going to write a book in the future?
Yes.
You should.
I started working on some stuff. Awesome. I've got so many Thailand stories.
Yeah.
Fighting for $30 when I first got there, fighting in stadiums made of corrugated iron with like 300 Thais, being the only Westerner in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Driving in the back of a van, on the back of a pickup truck for 6 hours in the middle of nowhere. And then there'd be 50,000 people in a park just out in the middle of nowhere. And then you're the only Westerner. And then I'd win. Yeah. It was just
ride home.
So many cool experiences. Awesome. And being the first, not only Australian, but the first Westerner to achieve so much and to put Westerners on the map. Raymond Decker and Danny Bill got to do so much, but I'm very lucky to be part of the heritage as well. So so many Thais would come up to me going, where are you from? Australia. Do Australians even do Muay Thai? I guess they do.
I guess they do.
Now.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I know you gotta get checked out so you can get back since you're done quarantine. Just want to thank you so much for coming on with us. It was great hearing all these stories from you, and really appreciate it.
I'm one of those guys that could sit around a campfire and talk for hours because I'm very lucky to have so many life experiences through martial arts. I'm so proud and so happy and just appreciative of life in general. I'm the guy that's not half full. I'm all the way to the top full.
Nice. So. It's the way to
be. I definitely hope to have you on again because we would love to hear more stories from you in the future.
Oh, please. I'd love to. I'm really appreciative of the opportunity to share some stories. So thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks again.
Yep. But yeah, thank you again for coming on. I know you got to get going, but I hope you have a nice trip home.
Hopefully next time it's a win. Hopefully next time it's
exactly.
It will be.
We can pop a can of Monster together.
That's right. It will be a win. Sounds good. For sure.
Yep. But we hope you have a nice trip home.
Hey, thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thank you. You take care. You have a nice rest of your trip home. Once again, that was John Wayne Parr. What a great guy.
Yeah.
It was great hearing all those stories from him, which was awesome. He took a little bit more time out than he had to, which is great. What did you take from that interview?
I've been a fan of John Wayne for a very long time, from his fights way back in the day when I first started getting to the MMA. But then, like, just see him on Instagram. Like, he's a very active social media guy. So when he says that he's following, he's replying to 3,000 messages, I believe him because I always see him, you know, boosting up people, fighters and trainers and promotions. He is as advertised. He is a legend. If you don't know, you need to go back and watch his highlights, watch some of his fights. He's 100% a legend. It was when you told me yesterday, hey, man, I got John Wayne Parr. You want to get on here? I was not missing this for anything. He's just an awesome human being.
Definitely. And I want to thank One Championship. They've been easy to work with the line up these fighters. They're probably the easiest group of people to work with and communicate with. I want to thank them so much. I want to thank John Wayne Parr for coming on with us. And once again, this is Cage My IQ. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch to find out all of our content. The best place for MMA content, Cage My IQ. But I am D-Bake, and this is Jim. You guys have a wonderful rest of your night.
See ya.
Thank you for watching this episode of Cage My IQ on the Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook at Sports Box Show, Twitter at Sports Box Show, Instagram at The Sports Box Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thank you for joining us.